America's 250th birthday. It's a great excuse to have some extra cake and ice cream, but we can help your celebration go well beyond that. Show your patriotism with America 250 apparel that will become a memento of this special year. We also have special episodes on AFA Stream to help underscore that America is a Christian nation and help you find God in the Constitution. Find all of this and more in one place. afa.net/topics/250.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great morning. Hey, I want to ask you, have you heard the term political Islam? You know, it's a term that's gaining notoriety and traction in America, in American public discourse. In political discourse, and people are talking about this thing called political Islam. You say, I'm not sure what that is. Well, just to give you an idea, it is connected to Sharia law coming to America. A recent House Judiciary Subcommittee held a hearing as to why political Islam and Sharia law are not compatible with the U.S. Constitution. Some people say, well, you know, all this talk among you Christians about Islam and the dangers and threats of Islam, it's just much ado about nothing. One guy just recently emailed me and said, you know, the Muslims make up a little over 1% of the United States population, and in 2050, according to AI, it's only going to be 2-2.5%, so why are we making a big deal about this? Well, we're making a big deal about it because it's a big deal, and it is a great threat to, as we hear from the Democrats, threat to our democracy. Well, if you want to talk about a threat to the Republic, it is political Islam, or Islamism as it is known. And to help me with this important discussion is my friend Pastor Daryl Harrison. He's the counselor and elder at Redeemer Bible Church in Gilbert, Arizona. And you may know him from his podcast with Virgil Walker, Just Thinking Podcast, where they do deep dives into specific subjects where Christians need to be in the know. And they recently did a deep dive into this thing called political Islam. So we want to piggyback on that work. Daryl, thanks so much for being my guest today, brother.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you, brother.
All right. So, Daryl, political Islam, when did you become familiar with that phrase?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Jeff. So as you alluded to earlier, the Just Thinking Podcast episode on political Islam that Virgil and I released, it was in November of 2025 that we released that episode. And my interest in political Islam was piqued as I surveyed what was going on really around the world. And what this sort of out of nowhere rise of Muslim political candidates running for office around the world. And it just seemed really strange to me to see the number of avowed Muslims who were running for office seemingly all of a sudden. And so that's what piqued my interest on the topic. And I reached out to Virgil to see if he would be interested in doing that topic, and to see if that topic would have sort of a wide reach if we were to release it as an episode of Just Thinking Podcast. And as we speak here today, Jeff, it's been downloaded over 100,000 times. So I praise the Lord that he led us in that direction. But political Islam is, as you alluded to, is a danger to not just the American Republic. It's a danger to the West, period. And I know we're going to talk more about that, but my initial interest in political Islam was piqued as I just was stunned at the number of Muslim individuals who are suddenly running for office in Western democracies, not to mention here in America. So that's how I was initially interested in that topic.
Daryl, do you think when you talk about a rise of Islamic candidates for political office, do you see that as being masterminded by somebody or just the devil himself? Or is there a human instrument that's saying, hey, we need to have somebody run here and somebody run there?
Well, to answer those three questions, Jeff, I would say yes, yes, and yes. And I know I'm probably, I may even make some enemies of your listeners by saying this, but I have to be honest with myself, number one, and just speak what I believe is the truth behind the questions that you just posed. I've long believed, and when I say long, I believe this for over 20 years, that Barack Obama really set the model for how to exemplify for Muslims how to run for political office in Western democracies. I've long held the belief that Barack Obama is a Muslim since I first became aware of him at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Mm-hmm. I remember the speech that he delivered one night during that convention, and I'll still say this to this day, he turned that convention hall into a Black Baptist church. He used Black preacher homiletics to get everyone emotionally riled up. And I remember saying to myself in 2004, I said, well, that night is the night that Barack Obama began to run for president. Mm-hmm. And as we know, he ended up being elected president at the next presidential election cycle. But I think Barack Obama set the example for Muslims around the world on how to present themselves to the West as with respect to how to run their political candidacy and run for office and win. So subsequent to Barack Obama, we have people like Sadiq Khan, who is now the Muslim mayor of London. And, you know, I would challenge anyone to just look at London prior to when Sadiq Khan was elected mayor in 2016, and then look at London now. You have in Georgia, my home state, there was a Muslim woman who initially put her hat in the ring to run for office, but she recently withdrew her name and is not no longer running for governor there. But now she's running for Senate there in an area of Metro Atlanta where she thinks she can win. Mm-hmm. So they present themselves as kind of like you alluded to earlier. They present themselves as individual Trojan horses.
Yes.
Where on the outside they're unoffensive, they're non-confrontational. They speak and dialogue as you and I would, but their worldview is entirely antithetical to Western constitutional principles, especially as it relates to the United States.
Yeah, it's a real concern. I think, Daryl, what's hard for Christians is we're commanded to love everybody, to speak the truth in love. And, you know, when you're dealing with an ideology that is against the United States Constitution, obviously against Christianity, I think it's hard for Christians to know, how do I deal with this person? You know, if somebody breaks into your home ostensibly do harm to you, you're not saying, hey, let's break bread and have a meal together.
Right.
You're going to be aggressive with them because you're wanting to get them out. So if we think about it in those terms, should we be aggressive with Muslims and want to get them out of our country? Or should we look at this as an opportunity to share Christ with them? Or what would be the stance?
Yeah, I think you can do both. And let me contextualize what I mean by that. You know, Jesus himself said that he was sending us out as sheep among wolves. So he didn't say he was just sending us out as sheep. He said, Jesus said the context of the environment in which his people were going to be engaging the world and the culture. I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. So I think the best offense, I will just do an interchange of words and say, no, not aggressive, but I think the best offense that a Christian can employ is to be informed about what Islam is, to be informed about especially what political Islam is. That's the best offense you can have with respect to lovingly and intelligently and informantly engaging not just other Muslims, but engaging the political landscape that is staring us in the face right now. We cannot afford to put our heads in the sand on this under the guise of loving one another. That's ignorant. You know, you use the example of someone breaking into your house. Well, you know, you don't lock your door. You don't wait until someone breaks into your house to get locks on the door. Mm-hmm. You lock the door so that that doesn't happen. Okay. And we have to take the same approach with respect to what political Islam is. And this is one reason why the Just Thinking episode, the version I did on political Islam, is more than 3 hours long. Because as you said, Jeff, when you were introducing me, we did a deep dive. We do deep dives on these topics, and you cannot afford to treat lightly or superficially a worldview, an ideology such as political Islam, which not only wants to control the way you live, that ideology, if necessary, wants you dead. Mm-hmm. They want you dead. Being an infidel, being a non-Muslim, and every non-Muslim is an infidel, and by definition, being an infidel makes you an enemy of Islam. These people want you dead. So, hey, love one another. They're all image bearers of God, just like we are. But you don't go blindly and casually into enemy territory and not be prepared with the proper weapons. You know, we're not called to commit ideological suicide here. God in his mercy has given America as the model for the West for individual freedom, individual liberty. No, we're not libertines. We're not saying we want to leverage that liberty to just where a person can do whatever they want. But within the awareness of human sinfulness, okay, you have to look at Islam as for what it is. It is a demonic, evil worldview, mm-hmm. where death is in its DNA.
Yes. That's exactly right. Okay, now, Daryl, I saw a clip from Colonel Alan West, and he argued that Islam really isn't even a religion. It's a military political ideology, more so than what we would look at as a religion. Would you agree with that or disagree?
I completely agree with Colonel West. That's why I do everything I can to avoid referring to Islam as a religion. If you go back to the origins of Islam, when it was founded by Muhammad, the whole ideology was an ideology of conquest. As a matter of fact, Jeff, if I could just take 1 second, I want to read, I want to quote rather, author Sarah Lee, who wrote an article titled Understanding Political Islam. And in that article, she gave the best definition I've ever come across of what political Islam is. She said this, she said, quote, she said, at its core, political Islam seeks to integrate Islamic principles and values into the political sphere, often with the aim of establishing an Islamic state or governance structure. By a renewed emphasis on Islamic identity and a desire to challenge Western-style modernization and secularism. So, an unquote, by the way. So, from its very beginning, Islam has been an ideology of conquest masked as a religion. It has never been that. Matter of fact, I would argue that the very term political Islam is an oxymoron, because Islam is inherently political in and of itself. Mm. It is an ideology of forced conquest, forced domination, forced coercion. The very word Islam means to submit. Mm-hmm. And I would add, it means to submit by force of conquest. And it's been that way since it was founded in the 7th century. Nothing has changed with regard to that. I completely agree with Colonel West.
Yeah, well, that makes it that much more dangerous when we think about it like that, because it is an enemy that wants to take over. It doesn't play ball with anybody. It's,
no.
You know, when we come back from the break, we'll talk about New York City and Zohran Mamdani. Mm-hmm. He's a socialist Muslim. And I think the socialists all are in small letters and Muslim are in capital letters. And when push comes to shove, you're going to see which one is going to dominate. People better wake up and smell the coffee because the enemy is coming in the gate, that's for sure. Well, we're talking to Pastor Darrell Harrison, counselor at Redeemer Bible Church in Gilbert, Arizona, a great friend and a guy that has great insights on things. We're talking about the subject of political Islam. You're listening to Real Truth for Today on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Well, welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here, talking to my friend Darrell Harrison, counselor at Redeemer Bible Church in Gilbert, Arizona. And for a number of years, Darrell was working for Grace to You out in California with John MacArthur's ministry. And Darrell, I got to ask you, do you miss your Grace to You days?
I do miss my Grace to You days, Jeff. So the way I put that, so I spent 5 years out in L.A., worked for John MacArthur at Grace to You. I miss John MacArthur dearly. I probably watch more of his sermons now that he's gone than I did when he was alive. But I do miss my Grace to You days. They were wonderful, wonderful days, incredibly blessed. I met some of the most incredible people working there, not only John MacArthur, but Phil Johnson, the executive director at Grace to You, my former boss, Jay Flowers. I love and miss all those folks. So the way I put it, when we left, my wife Melissa and I, when we left California in 2024, I'll tell all my friends today, I said, I left California. I didn't leave Grace to You. Grace to You will always be a part of my heart, part of my life. I can't say the same for California, but that's kind of how I put it. I left California. I did not leave Grace to You.
Yeah. So a Georgia boy who went to California, didn't like it. Now you're in Arizona, which doesn't seem to be grossly different, is it?
It depends on what you mean by different. You know, it's hot. It's hotter here, actually. It gets hotter here than it does in Southern California, you know, but Arizona, pretty much the entire state.
I was thinking politically.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same. I mean, I was you and I were talking offline, and I was saying one of the things that sort of surprised me here was how liberal a place Arizona is. But when you think about it, Jeff, Arizona is still one of those places where it has carried forth from the 60s that this is a place where, hey, if you're a hippie or if you're a free loving individual, you can come here and be yourself. So people come here to Arizona to find space, to be alone, to get lost, you know, to where nobody can find them. These are these, you know, maybe second, third generation hippies that come out here. So they bring that sort of liberal, you know, universalist sort of mindset to themselves. With them when they come out here, and this is how they vote. They vote just like Californians do.
Well, formula for eventual disaster, that's for sure. Okay, so we're talking about political Islam, and I had mentioned right at the break about Zoran Mandani, the mayor of New York City, the largest city in America, 32 years old.
Yeah, I think he's 32 years old.
Socialist Muslim, and as I said, being a socialist is a concern all by itself, but when you lump that together with being a Muslim, it seems like he's riding the back of socialism to get the Democrats to get on board, the Bernie Sanders and AOC folks to get on board. But he's going to gravitate toward Islam and political Islam for sure. And no doubt, if he had the choice, he would love to institute Sharia law in New York City. How do you see his political office right now and his political future? I think he's going to destroy the city.
Well, that's what the goal of Islam is. I mean, I'm not being flippant when I say that, but as I alluded to earlier before the break, one of the primary goals of Islam is to destroy the West. And when I say destroy the West, I mean more specifically, destroy capitalism, and destroy a Judeo-Christian ethic wherever it exists. Your listeners may be surprised to know, Jeff, that within political Islam, social justice is a core tenet of Islam. It is a core tenet. As a matter of fact, there are five primary principles and ideologies that undergird political Islam. Let me just run through them real quick. Number one is the sovereignty of God and the supremacy of Islamic law. That is number one. If your listeners don't remember anything else from this discussion that we're having, they need to remember that political Islam is undergirded by the sovereignty of their God, their false God, Allah, mm-hmm. and the overall unwavering, non-negotiable supremacy of Islamic law, what you referred to correctly earlier as Sharia. Number two, there's the importance of Islamic identity and unity. So with respect to social justice, Zohra Mamdani in New York, or any Muslim mayor, they're going to exalt their fellow Muslim citizens above everybody else. So as it relates to unity and equality, it starts and begins with Muslims, and then everybody else gets the leftovers. Number three, the rejection of Western-style modernization and secularism. This is why pretty much everything that's Western, that's contemporary, that's capitalistic, that's free market, Muslims are against. Number four, as I mentioned, the pursuit of social justice and equality. And then number five is the role of what's called the Ummah, that's spelled U-M-M-A-H. The role of the Ummah, or the Islamic community, in shaping politics and society. So social justice and socialism is part of the DNA of political Islam. This is why one of the first things Zohra Mamdani promised, and he did this when he was campaigning, was free this, free that, mm-hmm. free housing, free public transportation. Now they're launching these free grocery stores. And we all know that nothing's free. We know this. We know that is an inherent lie of socialism. Nothing is free. Just because you don't have to pay for it, that mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's free. But Mamdani is implementing, and this is the danger of political Islam. What they do is Muslim politicians leverage in the West, they leverage democratic freedoms, and in America specifically, they leverage the Constitution mm-hmm. to implement Sharia law. And in this case, Mamdani is going even a step further. He's turning New York, which is arguably the capitalist bastion of the world, mm-hmm. into a socialist Islamic state. And you look at the people that he surrounded himself with his cabinet, they're either radical Muslim sympathizers, radical communists, or radical socialists. Every last person he has on his staff. So I totally agree with you, and I don't think you're exaggerating. This man is going to destroy New York City. This has been his goal. This is why he ran. This is why any Muslim runs for office. It's mm-hmm. to destroy the Western capitalistic Judeo-Christian ethic. The Judeo-Christian capitalistic culture is, by definition, by its very existence, against Islam, and it must be destroyed.
Okay, so as far as the human puppet master for political Islam, do you see that as being Barack Obama?
Absolutely. I answer that question. I will not hesitate in answering that question. Absolutely. That's been the case since he was nominated for president. Absolutely. I don't have any more to add to that question. Absolutely. I think Barack Obama he's a wizard behind the curtain.
Yes.
He's a wizard behind the curtain. He's pulling the gadgets, you know, he's navigating through all the knobs and switches and everything like that. He is absolutely doing this. I have no doubt about that.
Okay, so Daryl, he's got to have help from the George Soroses of the world and people mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. George Soros is a Jew.
Right.
You wouldn't think a Jew would team up with Islam, since Islam wants to destroy the Jews and kill all the Jews. You know, we have that phrase, politics makes strange bedfellows.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, okay, the Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Socialists think they can use Islam to get their agenda across, and the Muslims know that they can use these useful idiots to get in power. How do you see that as far as Obama working with a guy like George Soros? Because they seem to have different end goals.
Well, it's like the old adage goes, right, Jeff? The friend of my enemy is my friend. So if you have though Obama and Soros may be, in terms of Obama being a Muslim, Soros being a Jew, if they share the same worldview, their differences in that area don't matter. They both share the same worldview. They both share the same worldview. Now, where Soros, I would love to dig into the origins and the genesis of Soros's worldview. The origins of Barack Obama's worldview is more easily defined and constructed, I think, because being raised as a Muslim, he was taught as a boy to hate everything that's not Muslim. But a guy like George Soros, you know, you have to ask a guy, because there are various types of Jewishness, if I can use that word. Just because Soros is an ethnic Jew doesn't mean that he is an ally of Israel. That doesn't mean that at all. I would argue that he's not an ally of Israel, for example. But as long as he and Obama share the same worldview, it's the friend of my enemy is my friend. So yeah,
the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
So this is where we are with Obama and Soros. So I have no doubt that they're in cahoots with at least at a minimum level to finding who they deem to be Muslim men and women who can run for office and win. And by winning and then getting into office, they surreptitiously employ Sharia governance principles and actually carry out their elected office under Sharia principle. So, I have no qualms at all, no hesitation to say that regardless of whatever differences that they may have from an ethnic background or whatever, Obama and Soros absolutely share the same worldview, and that's what makes them partners in all this.
Okay, when you think about the end result, so you let Mamdani do whatever he wants to do, destroys New York City financially, the people that have means and can move out will move out. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered this. It's like, okay, so people that vote Democrat, I mean, if it doesn't matter, you're a yellow dog, I'm going to vote for you, so that, you know, the yellow dog Democrats. When you get what you vote for,
right,
it's just devastation. Devastation right. For the masses. What do the elites get out of it? Just power?
Yeah, because that's always the way. That's always the prize for the elites. The elites know this, and this is why, think about it, Jeff. Why do you think there has been one revolution after another across human history? It's because those who revolted, in the end, were shocked that they didn't get what they thought they were going to get. So let's have another revolution. Well, mm-hmm. That one didn't work. So let's have another revolution. You know, so and this is what the elites recognize. The elites recognize, as I was trying to say earlier, they recognize human nature. They know that human nature will settle for a promise of something. Mm-hmm. They know that all you have to do is promise them. You don't have to deliver anything. Right. You don't have to deliver on the promise. Or if you do have to deliver, you only need to give them crumbs from the table. You don't invite them to the table. The elite know this. They know this about human nature. And this is Mamdani, for example, he's only the latest face that is the front of an old satanic idea, socialism, that has never worked and won't work this time.
Right,
but the what's beyond that, brother? As we hash this out further, is the human nature aspect of it, Jeff. I mean, how do you explain human nature that repeatedly falls for these empty promises when history objectively proves that it doesn't work. It's not going to give you this nirvana that you think it is, to where these people, they don't want to work. They don't want to earn a standard of living. They want everything given to them on the backs of those who do work. And so they keep voting for these elitists who just surround themselves with a small group of power brokers who look down on them and laugh. I'm sure that in Mondami's cabinet meetings, or when he's home with his wife, he has to just laugh at how easy this has been for him. But they know human nature better than some Christians do. And it's amazing how this just repeatedly works across human history, and we just don't seem to learn from it.
So as Christians become aware of what's going on, and hopefully society becomes aware of what's going on, for them to have a House Judiciary Subcommittee looking into why political Islam and Sharia law are not compatible with the Constitution, there is an awareness, and it seems to be a growing awareness, of this is a problem. Do you see us being able to effectively combat that?
I think we can effectively combat that, but here's what's happening. You've got a two-pronged war going on. You've got people like us who are trying to elect people to office to combat that, but at the same time, the other side is trying to elect Muslims into from the local areas on up to the congressional level to defeat people like you and me who are trying to get candidates in to defeat them. So this is a standoff right now, and we'll see how involved Christians get in this fight.
Good point. We're talking to Daryl Harrison. Daryl is counselor at Redeemer Bible Church in Gilbert, Arizona, and the co-host with Virgil Walker of the Just Thinking podcast, which is a great deep dive podcast into a lot of different subjects. One of those subjects is what we're talking about today, political Islam. I'm Pastor Jeff Shreve, and this is Real Truth for Today on American Family Radio. We're up against a break, but we'll be right back. Don't go away.
This June marks 3 years since the overturn of Roe, but did you know that since then, the number of abortions has surged to a 10-year high? Preborn Network clinics continue to support women facing unplanned pregnancies, showering them with God's love and providing free ultrasounds. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, she's twice as likely to choose life.
It was like the beginning of my healing journey. They do an ultrasound. That's when everything changed. When I saw my baby and when I heard her heartbeat, that was it.
$28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 helps to rescue five babies. Your generous tax-deductible donation also helps to provide women who choose life with assistance for up to 2 years. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to Daryl Harrison. We're talking about political Islam, also known as Islamism. Some say we're creating a boogeyman and just trying to smear Muslims, and we're Islamophobic. Daryl, no doubt you've been called Islamophobic, along with other names, I would imagine. Uncle Tom and a homophobe and all those things. Why is this sounding the alarm on political Islam? Why is this not Islamophobic?
Yeah, first of all, I don't even buy into that word, Islamophobic. So I reject that term outright. So, a matter of fact, Jeff, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think it gives us as Christians a lesson in apologetics. When you're called any sort of pejorative, in this case, the pejorative may be Islamophobic. you have to reject those terms. You don't even converse with anybody who uses a term like that. You totally reject it. You don't give them the pleasure of engaging in a conversation because the term is used to automatically put you on the defensive. Okay. So as a Christian and as an apologist, we need to be able to identify argumentative tricks like that, where someone will throw a label on you. What you have to do is just immediately reject that label and even refuse to engage in conversation with the individual if they insist on using that label. So, but as it relates to people who may throw that pejorative at me or you or any other believer, you know, there's nothing I can do to change that. The thing about the episode that Virgil and I did on political Islam is that if you were to listen to that episode, you would hear us cite one Islamic source after another, one documented Islamic source after another, that from the Quran to Islamic scholars and the books and the white papers that they write, we cite one Islamic source after another to demonstrate to the listener and prove to them that in Islam's own words is a political worldview. We don't just give you our subjective opinion on this. Oh, we think Islam is political. I hypothesize that Islam is political. No, we prove to you from their own historical and sacred writings that Islam is a political worldview whose only and ultimate goal is to put the entire world, and I mean that literally, to put the entire world under the domination of Sharia law. So they can call me a homophobe, I'm sorry, Islamophobe all they want. I really don't care. They can't refute the facts which Virgil and I presented from their own Islamic writings.
Right. And I've seen enough Muslim leaders that have basically said we've come here to take over. We're going to have we're going to have Sharia law in Washington D.C. and it's going to happen. And we're having babies, and you're not having babies. And you know, it may they're playing the long game.
Exactly. That's a great point, Jeff. You know, it's really a shame how they're having babies and we're aborting our babies. But this is what political Islam does. People ask me all the time, well, if they don't like America, why don't they just go back to where they came from? You know, but what people who ask that question don't understand, it's not that they don't like America. They're here to make America Islamic. That's why they're here.
Yes.
This is why they hate America, because they hate the West in general. They're here to make what is not Islamic, Islamic. That's why they're here. So this is not a matter of, you know, them not liking America. What they don't like about America is that America is not Islamic. And this is one of the tools, one of the tactics that they employ is having all these children. They have all these babies where, you know, and, you know, Muslim man, he can have multiple wives. So in Islam, if you're a man, you can have multiple wives. You can have multiple children. They're having all these babies. As these children grow up, they're registering them to vote, and they're going to vote Islamic. And as we point out in the Just Thinking podcast episode that Virgil and I did, in Islam, we quote an Islamic scholar who says this. Islam teaches that they will partner with whatever political entity helps them achieve that goal of Sharia law. So isn't it interesting, Jeff, that literally every Muslim candidate in America is a Democrat? Every single one. There's not been, to my knowledge, there has never been contemporarily a Muslim candidate who has run for office as a Republican.
Now, as a voting block, I know how they vote in Minnesota with the Somalis, but as a voting block in general in America, are they primarily all voting for a Democrat candidate?
Absolutely, because they know that the Democrat Party will provide them with a roadmap. Right. We were talking about earlier about how Barack Obama is the wizard behind the curtain. They know that the Democrat Party is the Democrat Party has enough Muslims in its own party right now to help them along that yellow brick road, so to speak, to get them to Oz, to get them into the Senate, to get them into the House of Representatives, to get them into mayorships, as we're seeing, get them in governorships. As well, they know that the Democrat Party has no the Democrat Party's hatred of America is such that they will facilitate Muslim political candidates getting into office. They know this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we know how bad it is living in Gaza under Hamas. We know how bad it is living in Iran under that regime. And the Iranians are all for President Trump and the attack on Iran because they want to be set free. What is life like living in Saudi Arabia?
So Saudi Arabia, to my knowledge, there may be others who can speak more intelligently and eloquently on this. But Saudi, do you know in Saudi Arabia, Jeff, that Saudi Arabia doesn't even allow Muslims to do some of the things that they're allowed to do here in America? In Saudi Arabia, you cannot just form a massive Islamic protest and block streets. You cannot form in mass in Saudi Arabia Muslims gathering by the thousands to pray in the middle of the streets or in public places. There are places in Saudi Arabia where that is outlawed. And Saudi Arabia is an Islamic nation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, life generally speaking in Saudi Arabia is hard for the average Muslim. However, there are areas within Saudi Arabia that become westernized to the extent that you have some degree of democracy, small d,
mm-hmm.
But it's very limited. But I just find it ironic that there are places over there where the Muslims in an Islamic nation, in an Islamic theocracy, don't allow Muslims the free reign that they have here in America.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how Muslims in America abuse the Constitution. That's how because under the guise that Islam is a religion, they abuse the Constitution. They distort their constitutional right to freedom of religion to where they view it as that they can do anything that their religion calls for, including disrupting your daily life by laying out a prayer rug on a flight that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Laying down a prayer rug in an office space, you know, gathering by the hundreds, if not the thousands, to pray in the streets, just totally impromptu.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how this is the deception of Islam. They come into Western nations, take advantage, they distort, invert, and absolutely abuse their freedoms, so that, you know, you, if you treat it as a religion, there's nothing you can do to stop them. So I'll say one last thing. We need politicians in America who are courageous enough to call Islam what it is. It is not a religion. It is a political worldview that aims to conquer and control every inch of land and territory that it sets its foot on.
Okay, let's put on the eschatological cap and look down the road. When the Antichrist comes to power, do you see him as being a Muslim, a Jew, pretends to be a Christian? How do you see that guy?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Let me just say this. You know, I'm not a prophet, so I'm not gonna pretend to be one here. But I do think, among some of the individuals that we talked about in this conversation, I really do think that one thing Barack Obama did to ingratiate himself to a lot of Christian voters was to put himself off as a Christian.
Right.
I think he was masterful in doing that. You know, he was a member of a arguably the wokest church in the country at the time. In Chicago, so he did have membership at a church, and unfortunately, you know, that was enough for, I don't know, probably millions of Christians, professing Christians who voted for him, for them to say, oh yeah, he's a Christian in my eyes. So, you know, who knows who the Antichrist is? I would just say this, that there's enough evidence out there, enough objective evidence out there for any Christian with their eyes open to see that there are antichrist ideologies at work. Mm-hmm. There are Antichrist worldviews at work, and there are Antichrist individuals who are heading up and advancing these ideologies. And we talked about a couple of them, Barack mm-hmm. Obama, George Soros, and others. So though I cannot identify who the Antichrist is, I think there are individuals who, like the Antichrist, like Scripture portrays the Antichrist, who have demonstrated how easily it is to lead people astray, even Christians, even professing Christians, to lead them astray, to sort of casually and almost unconsciously get them to buy in to mm-hmm. Antichrist, anti-biblical worldviews and ideologies that line up right with what Scripture teaches the Antichrist will be in business to do.
Well, one of the things I've kind of wrestled in my own mind, Daryl, is when you think about how the Antichrist gets the whole world together, he's a one world leader, Islam doesn't play ball with anyone because it's its own thing. But he's going to have all those Islamic countries along with the atheistic country of China and North Korea. They're not Islamic, but they're all going to form together. I've often wondered, how does that work? Because especially with Islam, they're not going to follow somebody that's not Islamic.
Yeah, I just think this is Daryl Harrison's own personal perspective on this. I think, Jeff, we need to keep an eye on the UN. I think mm-hmm. the UN is going to play a pivotal role in that. Matter of fact, that's why the UN was formed to begin with, to try to get sort of unify all the nations in accordance with this sort of singular, worldview or ideology, whatever you want to use, so as to bring peace around the world. That's why the UN was formed. And I think when you look at the UN, they are getting more and more favorable in terms of Islamic. I think the current president of the UN is a Muslim. When you look at their policies, they are definitely Islam sensitive. At a minimum, they are Islam sensitive. So I think what you can have is, again, though you may have a communist nation like a North Korea or a China or a Russia, I think when it comes to the UN, I think you'll be able to bring all those people together under the same secular worldview umbrella. That's mm-hmm. what's going to do it. It's not going to be a religious thing at all. It's going to be get those people to consent and agree on how we want the world to look like secularly. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to be a problem, to be honest with you. So I think we need to keep our eye on the UN and who's leading the UN and the policies, like the climate change policies that they're trying to advance. Mm-hmm. You've got dozens of nations that have signed off on that, Agenda 2030.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back to what you said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they'll all hate Israel.
Right.
And so we all come together.
They'll all hate Israel and hate America. They'll all hate Israel and they'll all hate America.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the binding tie right there. Do you hate Israel or do you hate America? If they raise your hand, yes. Come on, you're on my team.
Yeah, very good. Well, this has been a fascinating study, Daryl, political Islam. So if our listeners wanted to go with that deeper dive, how do they find the Just Listening podcast?
Yeah, so a couple ways you can find us is to go to our website, justthinking.me. That's one word, justthinking.me. Or if you're a podcast listener, Just Thinking Podcast is available wherever you listen to your podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, doesn't matter, Amazon. Just search for Just Thinking Podcast in your podcast app. Hit follow, and you will get all of our episodes automatically.
Amen to that. Daryl, thanks so much for being my guest today. It's always a pleasure, my brother. God bless you.
Absolutely, Jeff. Love you, brother. God bless you guys.
Well, thanks for listening to Real Truth for today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I'll be with you again next time. Go out, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.